Welcome to this episode of the Gonzo Chronicles. I'm your host, Cyrus Alderwood, and today we have an amazing guest on the show that I've been really excited to have on to talk everything Skinwalker and UFO with. Today we have Erica Lukes, and you probably know Erica from the Travel Channel's UFOs, The Lost Evidence, Ancient Aliens on the History Channel, and she's actually been on NASA's Unexplained Files on the Science Channel. So Erica, you've been all over TV. How are you doing today?
You know, I'm happy to be here, and I have been very, very fortunate to have opportunities to go on some of these shows and try to get information out, and it's been a challenge, but it's been a lot of fun, and I love the fact that I can open my emails and get messages from people all over the world that are having life-changing experiences, and it means a lot to me that people share.
Yeah, and you have a kind of a very broad career. That covers a lot of different things, and we'll get into a little bit of that. But let's kind of take a step back in time. I was kind of curious that on your bio it said that you got really interested in a UFO phenomenon at a young age. What got you into UFOs and kind of doing the extensive research that you're doing these days?
I ask myself that every day. I just remember being in grade school and picking up a book that had a UFO on the cover and having just this passion and this interest for it. And a couple of years ago, I found my grandmother used to keep all of my school papers, and I was looking through them, and there were two pictures that I had done, one of a couple aliens in a spaceship, and they were zapping this little ant, it's not the normal type of art that you would see. Most people would be doing Barbies and, different things, unicorns, whatever they'd be doing, but no, not me. It was UFOs and aliens, and it's just that subject, the unknown, always had an appeal for me, and the possibilities of things, and I think I always understood that there was more to life than what meets the eye. So it's been an interesting process.
So you had like I did as well, fascination with all things UFO and alien, mm-hmm. and the possibilities. When did that turn from a fascination to a passion for the research, actual real hard research that you're doing?
You know, I had some very interesting paranormal experiences in my 20s and late 30s, and so I started looking into that aspect of things. And then in 2013, I had a series of sightings over the Ochre Mountains here in Salt Lake, in the Salt Lake Valley, and I had a beautiful place. I'd sit out there every night and watch the planes come into Salt Lake International Airport and watch the sunset and the thunderstorms. And so that was my thing. I'd take a lot of photographs because I love photography. And one night I was with a friend of mine, and we saw this amber orange light that appeared to just be hovering right above the Ochre Mountains. And, we watched it, got the binoculars out. It was a single light, and it was hovering in, it was appeared to stay in the same position for quite a period of time, which would not be the way an aircraft would behave, because at some point in time you would see the navigation lights and different things. And so after, we watched this object, there was another object that appeared to come out of the larger object, made a circle around the big object, and then they both moved away. And so we were both like, that was interesting. What was that? And so I set up my camera for nights on end, and it took different photographs of things and tried to rule out a possible explanation. I mean, is this because, like I said, I was looking at the flight corridor for the international airport, so could it have been me just misjudging an aircraft? Could it be something in the sky? What was it that I was looking at? But I also felt, because we live in Utah, which is, we have a lot of interesting military installations here. We are in the Salt Lake Valley, about 80 miles away from Dugway Proving Ground, which, if any of you have heard of that, it's one of the world's largest chemical and weapons testing depots. We also have a considerable amount of airspace that is dedicated. It's restricted airspace. We have the NSA here, not too far away, the Utah Test and Training Range, Hill Air Force Base. So we have a big military presence. And so for me, not only did I want to know what this object was, but I looked at it from a perspective of, should I be concerned because I live so close to an area like this? And so I just, there were lots of reasons I wanted to get into it. And I, you know, joined MUFON, became the state director for MUFON, and also worked under Jan Harzan and did some stuff on the communications team. And that was an interesting experience. I learned a lot. And I wouldn't take back that time because, like I said, it just opened my eyes to a lot of things. But I, you know, it's been a fascinating process that's evolved. And where I was, you know, when it, I first started in this is definitely not where I am today. My thoughts on everything has changed so dramatically. It's been a really trippy experience.
Yeah, and just considering where you live, traditionally has been kind of like a hotbed for UFO sightings. And how much of that do you think would be attributed to legitimate UFO sightings versus what may be all military experimental aircraft?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that is something, again, that I would, you know, my thoughts and feelings about that when I started really doing this publicly, they've changed a great deal. It was interesting to me as MUFON state director that when I got in there to look at the cases that had come in, Utah had some of the smallest amounts of people that were reporting sightings. And it's my belief now that maybe the powers that be maybe cleaned up the database because some of the sightings that were taking place and people were reporting were actually that of military nature. So who knows at the end of the day, but I think there is a lot more that can be attributed to the military.
And we'll be talking a little bit more about that with Skinwalker Ranch, but you got in, was it roughly around 2013 or 14 that you got in with MUFON?
Yeah, 13. Yep.
Okay. Are you still with MUFON?
You know, no, I'm not. I resigned from MUFON, maybe 3 years ago. It was quite the resignation and not being the quiet, demure little thing. I definitely made a statement with that because I felt that there were some things that were very, very wrong. Not only the sexism, the fact that they were, I believe, absolutely hiding data, the fact that they'd been an organization for 50 years and had made no positive changes to the subject. In fact, it actually made it more of a laughing stock than a positive thing. I mean, there were so many questions that I had, and I felt, given everything that I went through and I saw other people go through, that I needed to put that forward to the public to let them know, you know, about the organization and some of the very serious questions that we should all have about it.
Yeah, MUFON has been a sore subject in ufology for a while now. And I contacted you a while back. I was writing an article that I put up on Medium about kind of like a civil war inside the UFO community. And that got some interesting feedback, to say the least, and some that were former MUFON. Actually, a friend of mine, I had no idea here locally, that used to be a member of MUFON, is no longer a member, and like I had no idea. And he was like, "Well, let me tell you why." You know, so there's a lot of that I got some feedback from. So you're no longer with MUFON, and then you started independent investigation, and it led you eventually to consider a local a place called Skinwalker Ranch.
Oh yes, this is another interesting thing, and I always, in fact, even before I became public, as far as my researching the topic and interest in the topic, I had studied Skinwalker Ranch. You know, we all are familiar with the book that put the ranch on the map and different things, and so that piqued my interest, and I began, you know, collecting stories, talking to people, doing all sorts of things. And then as MUFON state director, I got in there, and it was very curious to me that there were no reports around the ranch. Odd. But now it makes perfect sense to me. But it was very hard to find good information out about the ranch. But now, as you know, over the past few months, I have made some pretty big discoveries thanks to my husband, Chris Marks, coming forward with some of the experiences that he had while he was working for Bass, Robert Bigelow.
Right.
So the narrative has changed in a big, big way.
Now, for and anybody who would tune in when they see the hashtag Skinwalker Ranch next to this podcast, I'm sure well aware of Skinwalker Ranch. But for those that may not be, just my impression from when I first heard of Skinwalker, I'm thinking a location out in the desert of Utah run by the government, possibly military, and then maybe private sector at a time, where it's like the Wild West of paranormal, portals being opened up to other dimensions. Kind of like cowboys and aliens going on, cryptid sightings, literal and Native American lore, skinwalker sightings, shapeshifter sightings, hauntings. So you hear all of this stuff. And I'm thinking, if it's run by the government, nobody can go on there because it's kind of like Area 51. We've all seen the signs like, cross here and you're going to get killed. Then how the hell does anybody know? Who's been on the ranch to investigate? And that was kind of my question. Then I guess, because of Freedom of Information Act, you can always ask certain questions if it's maintained by the government. So they sell it to Robert Bigelow. It's a private entity that he doesn't have to answer to anybody. It's his land and he can do whatever he wants on there. So that kind of eliminated the Freedom of Information Act and people wanting to come onto the property by some legal means, right? But not going to happen. Then eventually he sold it. And we'll get into that too, because you cannot track who owns it now, which is weird. But your husband worked there. Your husband's name is Chris Marks, and you recently had him on one of your on an episode of one of your shows, UFO Classified.
Yeah, he has been on several episodes, and that was a real interesting process because I first interviewed him, and he had watched the trailer for Hunt for the Skinwalker, and it was totally removed from the ranch and any of that stuff. It was a job to him. He was paid to be there, and he has a life and a great career in the military and things, and so he had forgotten about that until he saw that trailer, and he was so offended by the way that the trailer portrayed the ranch and the threat and this narrative that he decided that he wanted to do something about that. And through a friend, a mutual acquaintance of ours, we got connected, and I did a series of interviews with him, and it was interesting because you listen to the first interview and he's very, pro Bigelow. He worked with Bigelow every day. Chris was with Robert Bigelow when he did the 60 Minutes interview. Everybody, he was the only person there with Bigelow. And so he had a very close relationship with Colm Kelleher and Robert Bigelow and all of the senior staff members at Bigelow Aerospace and things. And so he was very pro Bigelow. And still to this day, he cares very much about the people he worked with. He spent a great deal of time with them, this whole process has been really hard. But then, you start seeing some of the solicitation sheet for, this advanced aerospace weapons testing program, and you start getting some of these little bits and pieces of information through various channels, and then you step back and you go, wait a minute, let's analyze all of this, because when you look at what Bass or what NIDS was actually doing on the property, here you've got $22 million allocated, and by the claims of George Knapp, Jeremy Corbell, Colm Kelleher, all of these people, they're saying that ranch is, it is the most, it is the one place where they've done the most research, hands down, in any place in the world. And you step back and you say, wait a minute, these guys didn't even have, they had to bring their own cameras onto the property to do investigations. Wait a minute, none of the scientists would step foot on the property. And towards, during the Bass days, Robert Bigelow would not let any of his senior staff members, the people right next to him, he wouldn't let them go on the property either. But he let people like Chris Marks and Chris Bartell, the people that were going up there and doing the investigations, let them on the ranch to do their thing. And so you find out, you start putting pieces together and say, what if this was really looking at UFOs or paranormal? We would have instrumentation on the property. There would be much more hands-on from Colm Kelleher and the leadership of that, and they would, wouldn't just be the guys going out there spending days on end writing reports and then nothing. There were so many questions. And then the security cameras, Chris purchased fake security cameras from Amazon and put them up there. And so you look at that, and then you look at the narrative that has been presented by the Bigelow boys, and you say, wait a minute, there's a problem here. This isn't adding up. And you go back and you look at when the skinwalker and all of these things came to the forefront, and was it really that popular before the book was written? How have the beliefs been manipulated? There's so many questions, but this, in my opinion, stepping back and looking at everything and knowing now more about the way the government operates and some of the things, this was a big psyop, no question about it. And were they researching UFOs? I really don't think so, but we'll have to wait to see where the chips fall on this one.
Well, when I heard the one episode that you had, one of them that I listened to with Chris Marks, it's when you hear so much, and after a while you kind of take things with a grain of salt. But like as he was talking about it, and I could tell he was getting more, emotional and a little annoyed about, some of the memories that were coming back. And you could tell in his voice that he was the sincerity. And that's what struck me there in the interview. It's like, okay, either this guy's telling the truth or he's one hell of an actor. So because just the inflection in his voice, you could tell he was getting emotional about the memories that he was having. Tell us a little bit about what he went through on the ranch and what are they actually doing there? You said it's a psyop, but are these legends that are being pushed out into the public, is that a way to control the community at large that are into ufology?
Those are great questions. There is no doubt that this has been a very emotional and painful process for Chris to go through, and also Chris Bartell, his colleague. Chris spent the most time on the ranch and than anybody. And he would, go out there with nothing, no flashlights, just by himself. And he would sleep with no tent. And he really wanted to get a feel of the land. And he loved it. This was a very special place for him. And so to have these experiences, which at the time he was, we look back on it now, and he was definitely primed to have some of these experiences. So, you get your first week at Bigelow Aerospace, and what do? They lead you into this library. And the library has all of these books on Roswell and all of these things on the ranch and different things. And so, you're getting primed to go into a location, and given some of what we know about some of the weapons technology that we see now, could that have definitely played into some of the sightings he had? We don't know. He doesn't know. And so we're trying to find answers out about all of that, because it's been, everything that he thought and felt has drastically changed, and that's been a really hard process for him and for somebody who loves him to watch.
Now, did he have any particular sightings, or was this, for lack of a better word, maybe like an acid flashback, something that felt like that? You know what I mean?
He had some very profound sightings and some really interesting, and he's actually did, he had evidence, physical evidence. There was a time when he was, it was dusk and there was a lightning storm kind of moving over the ranch. And if you ever, you know, I mean, it is the most beautiful landscape in the world. It's just really, it is a gorgeous place, but you know, the lightning storm is rolling in and he's out and he gets this feeling of uneasiness. And he looks up on the ridge, on Skinwalker Ridge, and sees a man standing there. And at that point in time, he was on alert because, you know, they were out there by themselves or with one other person, and it's a huge property to cover. And they were getting reports from some of the people in Roosevelt, Utah, that there were people that were mentioning, you know, in the local bar or in the doctor's office, that they were going to go out and shoot them a shape-shifting reptilian at the ranch.
Okay.
And so, you know, they were concerned for their safety, you know, on multiple fronts. But so, you know, he looks up and he sees this man and is, you know, calls out to him and, you know, hey, you know, identify yourself. The man doesn't do that, but then he watches the man and can very vividly see the outline of a human. And this man appears to just bend in half and then outstretch the arms. The arms hit the ground, and the next thing he knows is he's watching a wolf come down. And I mean, of course, you know, your mind is, and I can't even imagine how you would process that. He's been in a lot of really intense situations, and so he's got a pretty quick mind. But he, you know, ended up kind of following the wolf, and the next day he went out and did what he needed to do to collect trace evidence to document the footprints where they are. You can see them. I've got them posted on my website and things where you've got a human footprint, and then within the next few feet that footprint turns into that of a wolf. And you know, he scooped up, tried to get DNA samples, sent them to Bigelow. Of course, they will go into the vault if you're never going to see it again, because we don't share information at Bigelow. But so he had the sighting, and then he had the physical evidence to back up what he was seeing, which is, it's very, the whole thing is very peculiar. But he was, you know, he's an investigator, military police, and so he's trained to look at something, to evaluate it, to put it, you know, to run it through the proper paces, and then to collect the evidence, and not necessarily to have, you know, I mean, to stand back from that and let the evidence speak for itself. And so he did have some sightings that were noteworthy. One experience he had that I think is really important and will probably become more important as time goes on is an experience when he was out patrolling one night and was hit with this beam of light, and it was so bright and intense that he shielded his eyes with his forearm, and as he closed his eyes, he could see the bones through his eyelids.
Oh, wow.
And so there was, you know, I mean, that was like an x-ray. There was radiation there. And we've been doing a lot of research and interviewing people that lived on the periphery of the ranch. And interestingly enough, there was no activity before 1997. And then people were having similar encounters with things. And so who knows what was going on. But like I said, I believe that a majority of it had nothing to do with paranormals or UFOs.
So these are things that he saw with his own eyes. He did investigation, right? And he never got to see the results of those investigations from any of the testing?
No.
Okay. So just the obvious question is there someone there that's doing psychological experiments on people to see how they react in these weird circumstances? Fabricating the instance, for example?
I absolutely think that could be one component to it. I mean, it's you know, a recent discovery that I've made is, you know, at Bass, they were saying that they were deploying 4 to 8 team members to the location at one time, and we know from both Chris Marks and Chris Bartel from their testimony that it was either it was one to two of them out there, and so were perhaps were the rest of them deployed to sit on the periphery and watch the way the people at the ranch reacted, and that is looking like that could be a possibility. There's mm-hmm. also mention in one of Jacques Vallée's diaries that early on he suggested to Bigelow that Bigelow monitor everything that took place at the ranch from an outside perspective. And so was this an experiment? Do these people that were on the ranch living there, do they feel like they were rats in a little cage? Yeah, they do. Okay. And they should.
Yeah, now the two Chris's and you yourself, when to this day do they believe, you know, does Chris believe that he saw a humanoid figure that shapeshifted into a wolf and walked away? Is that something he believes that he saw that was real? Or is he open to the fact that it could have been some fabricated psychological experiment on him?
You know what? He's absolutely open to that because he just, at the end of the day, he doesn't know. And with some of the evidence, you know, like I said, coming forward and some of the things that are, the technology that we have that is actually out, you know, that it's talked about. I mean, some of these things have been utilized for a long, long time, and Lord knows what the advances are, and so Lord knows how that could have affected him or what he saw. But I think it is interesting too to also note that there were and there are still specific places on that ranch that elicit certain types of emotion. Okay. So you get to this particular spot, and people, and this is more than one person, is saying they hear a voice inside their head that says, stop, get out, or you'll die. And guess what? We've got technology that does the same thing.
Yeah, I was about to say, because I've seen those documentaries where, they've had like radio waves, they point at somebody from a distance, and it puts thoughts in their heads, or they can hear water, or whatever they're trying to put in their head. But also, if like recently, within the last couple of years, Americans who have been in Cuba had fallen ill because they think they've been exposed to some sort of radio waves.
Yeah. You know, absolutely, and that's the thing. And even, you know, looking at some of the psychological operations that we have done over the years, I mean, we did it in Vietnam. We've done it at specific points in time, you know, where we would go into communities and try to convince a community based on their belief system that the Virgin Mary was appearing, or that, you know, this and that. And so, gosh, it, to me, this is a perfect example of a really incredible intelligence operation.
Yeah,
and I wanted to say this while I'm thinking about it. When you look at other locations in the world where they're actually researching the phenomenon, you actually see that they are doing a lot of things that we didn't see in this case. And it is also really important to note that nobody is getting injured in these locations. So does UAP, UFOs, do these encounters actually hurt people? I don't believe they do. But why do they at Skinwalker Ranch? Perhaps because that has nothing to do with UFOs.
I'm sure, you know, the people who have made the documentaries would certainly argue against that. But, you know, at the same time, when you compare that other evidence, and you've actually done a lot of investigations, not just here, but globally, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I have. And I had a really wonderful experience where I was invited to go to Norway and watch Professor Erling Strand and a team of incredible scientists from all over Europe who are actually making great strides, and they're investigating a little town, a little valley in Norway where they've been reporting sightings for decades. And that was a really cool thing, to climb mountains, to sit at a table where I'm, you know, the odd person out, and I'm with all of these incredible minds, and they're looking at ways to address this, ways to really move things forward. And they didn't have, you know, anytime you go outside of America, you don't have the kind of the, you know, the BS that you have here. This is an American phenomenon here, to have this kind of interference and this grand theater and all of these people pulling strings and things.
And to have a rift in the community as well.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I have to say, you know, I mean, I'm telling you, the more I learn, the less I want to be involved with, quote unquote, the community, because people in the community are more concerned about having a little social club than they are about doing the right thing.
I wanted to ask you, now Bigelow sold the ranch off in 2018. Was that possibly to avoid any kind of liability, since he was a private company, and then you've had people who could claim psychological damage, like from PSYOPs, that they claim on the ranch? Is that a possibility, or do we know why he sold it?
You know what? I think there are a couple different rumors that funding dried up. Who knows what happened with that, but I think that he doesn't seem... He wasn't then, and probably isn't now, concerned about the liability. He knowingly put people in there. You know, like I said, when other people were, you know, he told the scientists, you're not going there. You know, other people that were close to him, you're not going there. This is on record. And so it's unfortunate that now people like, Bartel and Marx learn that, and they understand that, wow, they were put in a situation where, according to their own accounts, Bigelow and Co., that people were getting gravely injured. And that is, it's such a, I think that Bigelow ever thought that he would be held accountable or called on the carpet for it? I don't. But definitely with things that have come to light, he is. And there are, you know, at the end of the day, when, and I've said this on my show quite a bit, when, you know, Eric Davis, Colm Kelleher, all of the people that were involved in this, Bigelow, when they look at themselves in the mirror at night and say, you know, we stayed off the ranch because we understood that there were risks, but we let other people go on there and then we studied them. You know, would we let that happen to our children? Would we let that happen to our loved ones? They probably wouldn't. And so, you know, there will be a day when they have to come to terms with the fact that they did that, and they push them out there. And unfortunately, they've given absolutely no support system, for people like that. And it's shameful. And, you know, while I'm on a roll here, because as you know, I'm very, passionate about this, you know, when you look at the UFO community, and, you know, just a few days ago, there were people that were posting, you know, they had the Bass, you know, little whatever emblem to get in, whatever, the little card that they used, and people were putting their pictures on that, making jokes and sitting around and doing all these things. And I kind of ripped in to a couple of them, because to me, when there is information coming forward from Australian researcher Keith Basterfield, Jack Brewer, several other sources who are actually investigating and doing good work, and you have allegations of human rights violations and things like that, then you know what, this isn't a joke. And I really feel that the UFO community needs to stand up and actually understand that this is more than just a Mary Kay cosmetics club, you know, or some, you know, little whatever club where you're meeting and laughing and having a barbecue and talking about whatever, you know, the tall whites and the Nordics and all of this nonsense. People are affected, and that needs, people need to be held accountable for that.
If they are doing PSYOPs there, then that would have a pretty huge national security implication, for starters. When Bigelow sold the ranch in 2018, I tried to look through public filings, and I found that he sold it to a company called Adamantium Holdings,
mm-hmm.
which, isn't that like a play on something from Iron Man, I'm thinking?
Yes.
Okay, so it's a shell company, and I was looking through public filings, and maybe I'm looking in the wrong place, I don't think so. I could not find anywhere who owned Adamantium Holdings. I did find one article that referenced a kind of a Well, it was a tweet from somebody claiming to be an attorney for Adamantium Holdings that said that as many people were inquiring about who owns this, that it was buttoned up, the filings were private, no one would ever know because the person's name was somehow not associated, so this person's client would never be known. So, you know, you got to wonder why they would step in and buy the ranch, and then, again, even more secrecy than what Bigelow had initially had. Which is odd, you know. Who knows what they're doing there now? Have you and Chris inquired into what's going on within the last, say, 6 months or so? Or
you know, I back in 2016, after Bigelow sold the ranch, I was actually approached by the new owner of the ranch, and so I'm very well aware of who he is, and many meetings with him and the people that work at the ranch, and I believe that they are doing good work. They've definitely done more as far as the infrastructure and putting things into play where they're actually collecting data. So I'm hopeful that they are doing good work and trying to get to the bottom of things. And I'm also hopeful that with the allegations of weapons testing and things like that, of that nature, that they would take into account maybe the security and safety implications that would pose to the people that they employ that go to the ranch, and that they would want to address this if, you know, now that this is really coming up. So I'm hopeful that they will do that and do the right thing.
Okay. Because when I couldn't track who it was, I thought, well, you know, is this going to be another nefarious thing? But so you said you've met them. Would you be comfortable telling us who it is?
No.
Okay. I had to ask.
Good try. From my understanding, that definitely will be something that will be revealed to the public. I'm certainly not going to do that. And, you know, like I said, they have been very good to me. I'm hopeful that they are doing research, and that they also understand the gravity of the impact this has had on people that were there during Bigelow's time. And I hope that they'll work with us to get to the bottom of that, for not only, like I said, the people that are working there now, for their safety, but also to help bring closure to people that worked there during the Bigelow days.
Now, would you and Chris be willing to go back on and investigate?
Oh, you know what, we've talked about that. I mean, we actually at one point in time wanted to get married there. And in hindsight, I'm really happy we didn't.
That's one hell of an interesting place to get married.
Well, you know what? I mean, the ranch, in a weird way, I mean, it brought us together. And so it holds a very special place for both of us in that regard. I definitely, given some of the things that are coming out now, MJ Benias wrote an article for Vice. He was invited on the ranch by the new ownership, and in the article, it does talk about the fact that there are waves of radiation that are being monitored over the ranch, and that sometimes there are points where it isn't safe for humans to be on the ranch.
Okay.
There are other reports of people being physically pretty severely injured, and so, you know, would it be in the best interest to go back there and expose yourself to something at the end of the day, we don't know what we're dealing with.
I don't know.
I mean, of course, there's that sense of, you know, it is such a beautiful place, and it would be a very meaningful thing for me to go there with Chris and watch him go around to some of the places that he discovered that he really felt were important. I mean, that would be an incredible thing. So it's kind of, I go both ways, but we'll see.
So you said in the future we'll be hearing a lot more about the new ownership and what's going on at Skinwalker. Any idea how long that's going to be before the public kind of gets any kind of information on this?
You know, they do have a new show coming out on the History Channel. I believe it makes its premiere in a couple weeks. And so we're, you know, Chris and I are sitting back, and we're waiting to see how that rolls out and what they end up portraying and talking about. And like I said, we're very hopeful that it isn't another Bigelow narrative where it's the threat, and it's all about the paranormal. We hope that they definitely approach this and realize that even back, Combe and George Knapp and even Corbell have all mentioned numerous times, and John Alexander, that there were contractors that were working for the government that were out on the ranch and near the ranch using toys, quote unquote, weapons testing. And so that is by their own admission. And so hopefully the new ownership will address some of that, because that has always been out there in the public. It's just that nobody's really paid attention.
You know, another thing that nobody really pays attention to these days, because it's been from such a bygone era, our own government probably set off, over 100 nukes out in that part of the country testing these things back in the, the 40s and 50s. And, so how much of that still, that's just something on the side. But you often wonder that, and then we wonder why people believe in such a thing as a deep state, because for one, in ufology, you never get any honesty, and I don't think there's ever going to be any disclosure, to be honest with you either, but.
I know, and when you look at the people that are promoting disclosure and, talking about all of these great things that are taking place, I mean, you look back and it's the same handful of people that have been promoting Area 51, that have been promoting Bob Lazar, promoting the narrative at Skinwalker Ranch, and so... at some point in time, we got to sit back and say, whoa, what is this about? And is this truly in the best interest of the subject? Is this in the best interest of people who have had profound experiences? I don't think it is. There are lots of things we need. I'm hoping people become more educated about and take a good look at. I know we want to believe, but it's not this way. Not being gullible and letting people take advantage and hurt other people.
Are you and Chris going to be a part of the new History Channel show?
No, not right now. I've not been asked, and that is, we're so busy trying to research what's going on and weeding through things that's not on our radar.
Is there anything new coming up for you for Ancient Aliens?
I am hoping that I will be back. That was fun to be on Ancient Aliens. I'm sure that we will get a third season, of UFOs, The Lost Evidence. And then I also have a couple other projects in the works where I have more creative liberty and I'll have more control to get out the message that I think is important. So I'm looking forward to all of that.
Yeah, you certainly have a fan base, because the other show you just mentioned is on the Travel Channel, right? Is that
right?
Okay.
Right.
To kind of change, because you mentioned something earlier, and this is kind of where this kind of gets a little weird with me. You mentioned a lot of psyops there at Skinwalker, and earlier you mentioned ATIP, which is, you mentioned the full name, Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. As we all know, anybody in this that follows ufology. There's been the To the Stars Academy, and then you've had Lou Elizondo also on the History Channel talking about being a part of ATIP. I could be wrong, so take anything, whatever I say, do your own research. But when the first person that comes out said, yes, I used to work with government misinformation and misdirection, it's like, okay, how do we know you're not doing it now? That is the first thing I thought. It's like, okay, if your job in the government is to misdirect people and provide misinformation for government purposes, what the hell are you doing leaving your government post?
Yeah, because exactly. And an intelligent person would step back and say, okay, once you've been trained in that regard, it's probably always the way it's going to roll. And when you look, again, same thing with Skinwalker Ranch, you look at John Alexander, non-lethal weapons at Los Alamos, you look at all of these people and you say, okay, maybe this isn't what it seems. And I definitely feel that with To the Stars Academy, that isn't what it seems. I mean, it is... I believe another push to steer the narrative. They're trying to promote this as a threat. These UFOs are a threat. And whether they are, whether they're not, I think the burden of proof is perhaps on them, which they're not clearly demonstrating. And I also you know, I mean, there are just some questions about the way the organization is run and some of the things people have done. But I know that there are a bunch of new people that have come into this subject, and they want to think that this is, oh my God, this is the first time we've got disclosure. Look at what these people are saying. And it's like, okay, but, you know, go back to the 70s, go back to the 60s with NICAP, go back to the 40s, you know, and 50s. This has happened time after time after time. You have government officials that are saying, yes, you know, we believe in UFOs, and then 2 seconds later, they're yanking the rug out from underneath us as and for their own purposes, you know, albeit whether it's for control, whether it's because they're trying to entrap spies or, I mean, all of this, there's a lot of things, but this isn't disclosure. And I certainly don't feel that we should have people in charge of leading a research project where we have the potential to communicate with other intelligences and they're viewing it as a threat. You know, I mean, that for me is a problem in and of itself.
Well, I guess, you know, my question would be, like, what would be their end game by saying it is a threat? I mean, again, I mean, even if it's not, why would they say?
So their end game is, it's a control system, because when you have, you know, you're establishing fear and a threat, you know, you're looking to the government to come in and save the day. And then you also be, you know, it is all about the contractors. Who's going to get money in the defense and aerospace world? You know, I mean, yeah. Where is that going? It's lining somebody's pockets. And so those are the two big motivations, control and money.
And no matter how much they make, you know, the budget's public, we never know how much any of these contractors are getting, because there's right. So much money funneled through other means. Now, the one thing that – now, Elizondo may be legit. I have no idea. But the one thing that kind of put a red flag up for me was when there was an article on The Intercept from about mid-2019 that where they asked they contacted to the Stars Academy because he said he worked for the ATIP program. They contacted, I guess, the government to ask them the Defense Department, and they said, yes, he worked for the Defense Department. I think it was for the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, but they said he never worked in regards to ATIP. But then to the Stars Academy sent something out to the same person to say, yes, he did. But Greenwald... this from the Black Vault. Is that his name, Greenwald?
Yeah, John.
Okay, yeah, he had, I think, and you probably know this, but, you know, for the listeners, Greenwald with the Black Vault, he contacted, tried to reach out several times through to the Stars and directly to Elizondo, Lou Elizondo, to be interviewed, and Lou Elizondo never responded. And this was from, you know, 8 months ago.
Right, and I think that from my understanding, actually, Lou Elizondo finally agreed to do an interview with Greenwald, and so, you know, I mean, that's good. I'm glad that Elizondo is doing interviews and things, but they're, you know, it's, you know, with Greenwald's research, because he's pretty relentless at doing FOIA requests, you know, he got a lot of responses from the Pentagon and different people that were saying things, you know, this program had nothing to do with UFOs. This was about weapons testing. You know, a lot of things that raised some questions. And so those are things at the end of the day, you know, what we've got to dig deeper. And we also have to look at some of the connections politically. When you go back to Harry Reid, and you go back to Robert Bigelow, and you go back to Stevens and Inouye, and you look at some of the deals that they have had over the decades and things, I mean, there's a big pattern here, and we have to understand that a lot of this has nothing to do with UFOs, and we should really look into that.
Now, just, you know, everybody wants to, you know, that one question, have they made contact with us? You know, is there a certain percentage of UFO sightings you think are actually that are legit, that you know, beings from other worlds have been here?
You know, I don't. I believe that there is absolutely something incredible. I believe that it is has probably always been around us, with us. Is it from, you know, is it terrestrial? Is it ultra-terrestrial. Is it extraterrestrial? I don't know. But there is something interacting with us. And I, you know, again, I want to stress, the more I've learned about things, the more I've stepped back and I've looked at when the extraterrestrial hypothesis was inserted and by whom. And so you have to look at the bigger picture on that. But I absolutely, there's something intelligent that is around us. It deserves respect. It deserves to be studied without bias. I do believe that there are places, like I mentioned, in Norway and other research taking place where they're looking at that and they're capable of doing it without pulling in this whatever this nonsense is that we seem to love here in America. And I, those are the shining examples of what science is meant to be. And it's not taking place here.
Now, you've had several personal experiences, and I'll not get into those because, here's a teaser, you're writing a book.
Yeah, I am writing a book, and I am writing a book with Gordon Lohr, who became a dear friend of mine over a year ago. And he, Gordon Lohr, has written several books, and including Mysteries. He actually wrote one of the first books he's written. But he wrote Strange Effects from UFOs, which was back in the 60s, and that was about the electromagnetic effects created by UAP and some of the things. That was a NICAP publication. He worked for NICAP, and NICAP was the most important organization in the 50s and 60s. It petered off in the 70s after it was infiltrated by the CIA, but Gordon is an amazing author, and he is my co-author. He's helping me write my biography and talking about the different experiences and sightings that I've had, and some pretty, it's awesome. I cannot wait for that to come out, but it has been a real pleasure to work with him. And he also generously, a year and a half ago, donated all of his files to my archive, to my collection, which is really, really important. And I look forward to being able to share his history and the history of NICAP with younger people in the field.
So when do you have an ETA on when the book may be out?
The book will probably be out, I would say, at the end of summer. You know, we're just getting the final touches put out on that. And then Gordon and I are going to go out and talk about that. It's been a fun process to write that with him. And he's just patient and kind. I learned so much from him.
Now, does he live near you? Do you guys?
He's in California.
Okay.
And so I wish he lived near me because I would love to hang out with him more. You know, we talk very frequently as we're kind of trying to get the book nailed down and things. But he's, you know, he is a true gem. And, you know, back when he was in NICAP, back in the 60s and things, he was in 70s, he had his own UFO organization. They were respectable. They were educated. You know, they would show up to do an investigation in a suit. And they, Gordon actually briefed Congress. And so he did so many important things. And that what they did back then is so much more important than the nonsense that's taking place today. And I really truly hope that people look up Gordon Lohr and they learn more about him and get some of his wonderful books. He's a gem, and we can learn a lot from him.
You've had him on your show UFO Classified before, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, when can we listen to that show?
So UFO Classified is every Friday night, and it is 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, and it's a two-hour show. It's on KCOR, and then I also put my shows on YouTube, which has been great. I've got some supporters that have been great about getting that out there. You know, I pay for my own show because I want to have the control of it, and I have some incredible supporters that care about getting the truth and you know, the integrity of the subject out there and things like that. But it's a labor of love, and I do extensive amounts of research before I bring each guest on. And each guest, if you look back and you really study some of the questions that I've asked in each episode, it builds upon each other, and it will give you more pieces of the puzzle that we're all unraveling together. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah, I seldom don't get a chance to catch it on the live stream, so I'm always going back to YouTube and kind of searching around, seeing who the guests are. Like, yeah, I'm going to listen to that one today. But no, you have a great show, so I hope everybody tunes in. And I do want to switch, like, just one more thing before I let you go today. You're an artist also. And I noticed on your website you actually have some of your art. You do water paintings.
You know, I do, and thank you for mentioning that. It was interesting because back when I, in 2013, when I started having, you know, that whole episode and venturing in publicly to the UFO world, I began to paint. I had a friend that brought me some watercolors, and she just said, hey, you should do this. And I picked up a paintbrush, and it was like this light went on in me. And before I'd been a singer for 25 years, I sang, and I had quit doing that because who wants to gig until 3 a.m. and yada yada. But so I took up painting, and it's been interesting to look at my work, you know, as I began, and it's morphed and different things. And it really is, it's a reflection of what was taking place, you know, internally with me. And it's been a great outlet.
Yeah, and the paintings are incredibly. They're really incredible. Thank you. And you incorporate, of course, ufology in it. I looked at it, I was like, oh, I love those. That's really cool. And they're for sale on your website. And as I was reading your bio, I mean, you're an artist in general because you've been in bands locally there in Utah. Mm-hmm. You've traveled around. You've done voiceover work. And, you know, so that's pretty incredible. Yeah, who wants to stay out till 3 o'clock in the morning? I don't know, Erica. I used to think I could be the lead singer for Motley Crue. But, you know, then I realized, like, hey, I would probably be dead in about 6 months living that lifestyle. But
I've been so lucky. I've had a million lifetimes. I've lived, you know, I've done so many different things, and I have loved every minute of it. I've been really, really blessed. So, and I feel the same way about my work in the UFO world.
Yeah, and it's really good work. So, yeah, anybody that's listening, go check out the show UFO Classified. Check out, it's ericalukes.com.
Yes, ericalukes.com, and then ufoclassified.com gives a little bit more on the radio end and things. And I'm also doing, when I can get some website issues resolved, I'm putting forward some photographs of Skinwalker Ranch during the Bigelow days, courtesy of Chris Marks. And I'll also be putting some reports out there and things, thanks to him again, and trying to get information out there so people can look at this logically and make it an informed decision.
All right. Well, I certainly appreciate you being on the show tonight. And when the book comes out, let us know. And I'd love to have you back on and talk about the book.
Absolutely. Back at you. I'll have you on my show to talk about your books.
Yeah, actually, you know, speaking of weird stuff, I wrote a book on the Georgia Guidestones. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, that's so cool.
So, yeah, I went down there and had to get on the ground and kind of do some digging around there myself. So, not that I'm much of an investigator, but I'd ask too many questions. But
well, I'll have you on the show. Yeah, so that'll be fun.
I appreciate it. Thanks again for coming on. I really do appreciate it. And I'll definitely be in touch. I'd love to, you know, follow up on your book and with your co-writer as well.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being here. It's been a lot of fun.
All right. Take care, Erica.
All right. You too. Bye.
All right, folks. So what do you think, Skinwalker Ranch? I've personally been totally fascinated by that when I first found out about it a handful of years ago. And again, it was in, you know, the media, all the shows you see about. So whether it's a dangerous place, whether it's there for psyops like Erica and, you know, her husband have talked about. So do your own digging. Don't take my word for it. Don't take anybody's word for it. Go back and listen to some of her shows. Her husband's name's Chris Marks. So on her YouTube channel, she actually lists who she's talking to and what the subjects are. Fascinating stuff, man. So there's all those videos that are out there by different people, movies, documentaries. Soak it all in, folks. It's we're all fascinated by the odd and weird here at the Gonzo Chronicles. And I appreciate you guys tuning in. So I've, you know, bent your ear for an hour. And thanks again to Erica for coming on the show. We'll be back soon. We're going to have some more cool guests. We're actually going to be talking to a guy who was one of the heavy hitters in Marvel Comics in the late 80s, Gary Kuopas. Guy's cool. Actually, he's done some of my book covers. One of the most amazing artists you'll ever see. However, we'll come back with several shows probably soon. I don't know who we'll get next, but we'll certainly have somebody cool. Thanks again for tuning in to the Gonzo Chronicles. You can check me out online at cyrusalderwood.com. Check us out at Facebook and Twitter, and you can also search me on Amazon. Thanks again. Till we see you next time. Cheers.